Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 562 for comics originally released on May 16th, 2018. Now, starting us off in DC is New Challengers number 1. This is another one of the New Age of Heroes titles. This is actually kind of a modern version of a classic Silver Age property for DC of the Challengers of the Unknown.
Definitely. I knew nothing about Challengers of the Unknown. I did go online and just type it to see who in the heck they were, since it's New Challengers. And I saw, yeah, they had 10-cent covers way back in the day. I didn't want to read all the history on it.
I actually skimmed through the Wikipedia page this afternoon. I was maybe a little bored at work. I don't know. No, I had a few minutes between meetings. And I was just wanted to refresh my memory, because I've read some of the old stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is all completely new to me.
Back in the 80s, DC would do those small digest comics, the Blue Ribbon Digest and Best of DC or DC Superstars or whatever they were.
Okay.
And they would reprint some of these things, the original Challengers.
Okay. Did you like them back then?
Yeah, it was fun. It was cool. They fell into the same category as the Secret Six and Cave Carson and his crew, or the Sea Devils. Get a 4 or 5 or 6, you know, regular people that are experts in their field together, and they'll go do stuff. They'll adventure.
Okay, all right. Interesting. So, yeah, this one, having no background knowledge, I just took it at face value for what it was, and it was just, it was interesting to say the least.
I found it interesting because there were a couple of things that kind of confused me a little at first. Because since this is one where it's not like they're riffing off a Marvel property, but it's one of their own. When we started with the guy with all the bandages on and the biplane or whatever.
Yeah, I was looking at that, and I know there's a character in DC called the Unknown Soldier. Is that who in the heck that is?
That's my question.
That's one of the few things, because I'm into war comics. So I was looking at it, I was like, he's just on those first two or three pages, and then he's... You don't see him the rest of the time. I was like, I don't know if this is the Unknown Soldier. It could be. I don't know who that is.
I'm thinking it's either him or possibly Superman.
Superman?
I say that completely facetiously. I had just noticed on the title page the credit for Superman, and I'm like, but he's not there.
Oh, okay. I was like, why in the heck would you think this is Superman? Yeah, I don't know.
The only other thing is one of his eyes is kind of, you know, big and yellow, and the other's normal.
Oh, yeah. I didn't pay attention to that, but yeah, I see that now.
I don't know if that's building to something or quite what's going on here.
Yeah, what was interesting that I found with this book, I say interesting and I'm joking, it's frustrating, is going through here and you're introduced to these new characters, and me knowing nothing about the old Challengers, and I'm reading the new Challengers, nobody is given a name or spoken to using their name. Except for one person who says, my name is Crunch, just Crunch.
Actually, that's not true.
Oh, there are names? Where the heck are the names?
When the second guy crashes down or whatever in the transporter, for lack of a better word, he identifies himself as Robert Brink of Spiral.
Okay.
The girl then identifies herself as Trina Alvarez. Apparently she's a doctor or healer or something. We've got Crunch, we've got Moses Crunch. Barber, and there was something he said that made me wonder if he was the guy from the opening scene.
Oh, what did he say?
Something about face is intact, shouldn't be intact, not after.
Oh, okay, yeah, so that may be that guy. Okay, that makes sense now. That makes sense. And it was just kind of jarring how it switched to this thing. I was like... Okay, you have this one little scene, then there's a jarring switch, and then there's another jarring switch, just, I guess, kind of showing some background on these people.
Yeah, this is one where they toss a lot in here, but, and actually we do get Superman in a flashback in one of those cutscenes, so that's why he's credited.
I was getting ready to say that. I just flipped over and I just saw a picture of Superman, so yeah, he's there.
Yeah, but, you know, we get all these people literally thrown together, and we get a little bit of one or two of their backstories. And then we cut back to, what is it, the professor or whatever, who's ominously telling them, you're dead and you're going to have to do what I say or you're really going to die.
Exactly. And there's no explanation given to the people. Originally, he says, hey, you have to stay here or you'll die. And then one of the characters, something really bad happens to him when they step out a door. And it's not given, you know, the countdown and all that stuff. It really didn't come into play. It was just an immediate effect.
What got me was whenever you've got the, you know, like the Suicide Squad where they implant the bomb in the head to blow the brain off or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
That means whenever you have a new team or a new jumping on point, you need to recruit one extra person.
Oh, and that's who that guy was. He's the chump to show what happens.
The token example.
Exactly. You're the expendable guy. Here's what happens to you. Boom.
Yeah.
If
we go to the page, though, where most of the page is dedicated to the professor giving the exposition about the challengers of the unknown.
Yes.
And we've got that hologram of all of those people.
Yes, huge.
Yeah, and at first I'm like, man, this is cool. They're turning it into kind of like a legacy team. It's more than just the, I don't know, let's see, they're the original four plus June, one or two others, the three. All said and done, the Challengers had maybe a dozen members prior to this issue. Here we've got a lineup that looks as like, I don't know, 50 to 100 or something crazy.
Exactly. There's tons of people. So I was like, oh my gosh, there must have been tons of Challenger teams because I didn't want to read that big Wikipedia page. I was like, oh my gosh.
Well, he's talking about the annals of this impressive heritage. But then Brink, I think it was, who walked out the wrong door, melts down, poof, he's dead, and he's getting added to this hologram.
Yep, immediately. There he is.
I think the professor's kind of inflating the headcount of this team a little bit.
Yeah, and I wouldn't think he would be held in the annals of history for a guy who just melted down and contributed absolutely nothing to the team.
He taught a valuable lesson to the others.
Yeah, listen to the guy with the coat on.
But no sooner does that happen than we get another recruit.
Yeah,
and she doesn't get to learn that lesson.
No, she just boom, there you are. No explanation. She's part of the team. It's so weird. Everything in here felt so jarring and off to me. I was just like, the transitions were not transitions. It's just, it was almost like, oh, I changed my mind. Here's something else I want to talk about. Oh, here's something else I want to talk about. It wasn't woven together at all as a story.
That is what frustrated me because we got a lot I had an amazing amount of questions given how much exposition there was.
Me too. I read this and that's where I was getting it. I became kind of frustrated because I read it and it was, here's a two-page chunk, here's a two-page chunk, here's a two-page chunk, and they throw the book together. And at the end, a little bit of a cliffhanger, I guess, but I was just like left, I don't know anything that's going on. What's going on? I read it twice and I still don't know what's going on. So it was just kind of frustrating. The one question I had for you, not spoiling it, but that big splash at the end is, does that remind you of the Terrifics thing, how it started?
Yes, it does.
I don't know if that's going to get tied into that somehow, but that's one thing I was thinking when I saw that.
I'm wondering if this and the thing from the Terrifics may tie into the No Justice stuff.
That's the thing that I was thinking. It maybe they'll bring it together and they'll bring it home, but right now as this goes, it was so frustrating to read. And it just left me kind of – it put me off. I'm just like, oh, I didn't like it.
Now, at the beginning and a few other places, we had what, for lack of a better term, I'm going to call like a bone fragment because I couldn't tell what it was supposed to be.
Okay.
It's the thing with the glyphs on it.
Yes.
What did you make of that? Yeah.
I looked at it and I had no clue what that was. I mean, it was cool looking, but when I looked at it, I'm just like, this is here for some reason, but it wasn't alluded to anymore in the story, so I just don't know.
It's clearly got something to do with the opening sequence because it was cut to a couple of times there, but confusingly so. And then it's referenced a time or two near the end. And
at the
very end?
Okay.
I don't know where they're going with that or kind of why I should care.
Yeah, it's just like a piece of bone that was thrown in there and it's just so weird. And one thing that another thing that's kind of weird, okay, I know these people are brought together to be, you know, to help out, to do good things. And they're immediately launched into a crab monster, which made no sense to me. I was just like, what? What's going on here? It makes no sense.
Yeah, the plan for these missions doesn't seem to be that good.
No, it reading this, if this was a story that was not in DC continuity and maybe didn't have that hint of tying into the Terrifics or maybe into the new Justice League story, I would just be like, I wouldn't want to read further.
You know, it's interesting because I hadn't thought about it, but if this had essentially been, say, an Image title.
Yeah.
Not been the new Challengers, it was just the Explorers or whatever. You're right. I don't know that I would come back.
Yeah, I would be looking at this and I would just be so frustrated as a new starting point. Number one, as a new reader, and I'd read it and I'd get to the end and I'd just be left, okay, that's confusing. And you know, it's kind of disappointing because this is one of DC's big writers. This is Scott Snyder and Aaron Gillespie. I don't know him very well. Andy Kubert on the art. But Scott Snyder, a lot of what he's been writing lately with the Dark Knight's Metal and this, it's been leaving me frustrated sometimes. He has grand schemes, but he seems like he's struggling to put it together and make it entertaining for me.
It's almost like he's going after the school of I'm trying to think who would be. Well, there's Neil Adams, whose later stories of the last few years have been kind of just all over the place. Great to look at, kind of fun, but it's like, wow, I'm kind of surprised the story's going that way. And then there was, I'm blanking on the name, Final Crisis.
I know who you're talking about. Not Jeff Johns, is it?
No, not Jeff Johns. It's,
Final, who would
that? Big name writer, and I shouldn't be blanking on him. That's how sad it is.
All right.
The stories, though, for this guy get to the point where it's like half the story's left off the page. It's just, and this, and then this, and then this. Ooh, isn't that amazing? Wow. And I'm like, I'm still trying to find the plot here.
Grant Morrison? No. Who did Final Crisis? Can't remember.
Not Grant Morrison.
Anyways, we're going to be frustrated.
Yes, I'm sorry. I should remember this. But there are some writers, they've got grand ideas, and they're cool ideas, but if they can't convey them in an accessible manner... And here, I don't know who this professor is, why he's gathered these people, what their mission is.
Exactly. That was the thing. I was like, okay, here's these people who have died, and they've been transported to this thing where now they're kind of like the Suicide Squad. They're being held, you know, they're what's left of their life. Their essence is being held in check. Because they have to go on these missions and join this club of doing it. No clue why they're doing it. No clue what they're doing. It just made no sense. Nothing in here. I left this, read it twice, and I have no clue what's going on. I wouldn't know what to tell people is going on.
There's something about the concept of the Challengers that's inherently paradoxical. Because in the original stuff, they all survive a plane crash. They feel like they're living on borrowed time, so what they're going to do is endanger their life on a regular basis. They're
interesting.
Go have these adventures because, well, we're living on borrowed time. Let's live life to the fullest and risk ending it like, you know, if it were a TV show, like every 7 days or something, you know?
Okay.
And there's something about, I think a more rational approach to, or reaction to that would be to, I don't know, maybe live a little more cautiously, to enjoy the life you've got and not, you know, regularly endanger it.
No, it's true. I mean, like, if I injured myself, I drive more carefully. I've been in a car accident where I got flown out by a helicopter. Mm. I drove way more carefully after that. I didn't say, hey, you know, let's live life to the fullest and start gunning it all the time. And the same thing, like, if I went to the gym and I injured myself, which has happened before, you know, I'm not going to push myself to the brink from then on. That makes no sense to me. You would seem you'd savor what you have and not want to endanger or risk what, you know, what you just went through.
But it reminds me of one of my favorite quotes of Stephen Amell, who plays Oliver Queen on Arrow.
Okay.
Good decisions make for bad television. Decisions make for good television.
That is true, because without the bad decisions, this comic would not exist. You wouldn't want to see a bunch of people living very cautiously.
Yeah, he said that in answer to, well, why did Ollie do this? And he's like, well, I've come to realize.
It's very true.
It is.
Yeah, so me, like, what was funny is I put down a note. You know, we had a comic where we did The Hunt for Wolverine, and I said that was more like an A for accessibility. This is an F for accessibility. If you are a new reader, you're going to be totally turned off. If you're a longtime reader, you might be turned off because you leave this book not knowing what in the heck is going on or why you should care.
It's funny because on the one hand, I completely agree with you. But on the other hand, I also completely disagree with you because they do explain a lot.
Yeah.
The professor is just exposition central here.
Yes. If you don't pay attention to what he's saying, you'll be confused. Yeah.
Or you just lose interest because he's kind of boring.
Oh, yeah.
So there's that. But I don't know if it's accessibility that it's failing at, but context and relevance.
Yeah. I think that's what it is. And I think it's another thing that's happening. And I kind of talked with Eric on the Slack forum about this. It's a lot of people are starting to get turned off by Scott Snyder because he's becoming this inaccessible or incoherent writer. He has good ideas, but putting those ideas together doesn't always come together well.
Yeah. I think he's got a solid idea here, some cool concepts and visuals or whatever, but the sales job to keep us interested in coming back is kind of lacking.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If he came out with this great idea, here's this big picture, and I think he has big ideas. Here's this big thing. Now, Tom King, please execute this, and you probably get a better story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think this is going.
You know, it's funny because I came out of this a little frustrated with, I don't know why they're doing these adventures or what's going on with this team or, you know, I had a ton of questions, which given the mountain of exposition, surprised the hell out of me. But I'm curious enough to want to learn the answers, and I am going to stick with the title. But it goes back to your earlier comment. If this had been an image book or some other publisher, an indie publisher or whatever, they could have done this exact story, literally changed nothing but a few names, and I don't think I would come back.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing here because there's the tease, you know, the little thing of Superman or the tease to tie into maybe a Terrifics or to Justice League. And I think that tease is enough to keep some people who are really into the DC universe as a whole on. But, you know, coming in, if you're not really a diehard and you're not 100% in, I think this book would be, if it was like that indie book, it would be a complete turnoff.
Yeah, I think I'm certainly giving it a little bit of leeway because I'm familiar with the old Challengers of the Unknown, like the original stuff. Although I'll admit, there's some stuff later on they did that I just didn't care for.
Understand.
And I'm giving it, I don't say the benefit of the doubt, but the fact it's in a shared universe, it could tie into some other stuff. I'm curious where they go, but it's one of those things, if I had to drastically cut back the titles I'm getting, at the moment, this would be a very easy one to cut if I had to.
Definitely. Well, I'll tell you, this was my least favorite of all of the New Age DC heroes, and that includes Brimstone.
I've read some of the later issues of Silencer, Brimstone, Sideways, and Damage, and they're all roughly on par for me so far. None of them's head and shoulders above or below the others.
Yeah.
Maybe the Immortal Men. Terrifics gets an edge up because it's got name characters.
Yeah, Terrifics and Immortal Men. Immortal Men's, yeah, better.
So, I mean, for me, the whole New Age of Heroes, I'll be surprised if it's around a year from now.
I agree.
It's not bad. It just doesn't seem like it's good enough for as competitive as the market seems to be.
Definitely.
I was going to go with a B- on this, but the more we talked about it, the more I said, I'm going to go with a C+ on this.
Makes sense.
I think it's got its pluses and stuff. I think it's a little bit of a hard sell for a lot of people. I don't know how well it's going to get received.
Yeah, this one for me, the art was fine in here. The story, I can see if you look at the big idea, it has potential. But I just think it was the wrong person to write this book. So if you're a person who wants something that's going to be something that hooks you and keeps you wanting to read, this is not it. So for me, I went with a D+.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. It's unfortunate because I think they've got something that has got some potential. I'm just wondering if maybe the pacing is off and if they started off on the wrong foot with too much exposition on the history of the Challengers, not enough of why do these characters care that they've been roped into this and, you know, yeah. What's their mission?
And it could be one of those sad things that, once again, you know, 20 pages of story, there's only so much. And if he wanted to come in with all of this information in the first issue, that would happen. There's just not enough pages.
I don't know that they needed to find out the history of the Challengers of the Unknown in the first issue.
Yeah, that could have happened like at a second or a third, really, because we really needed to know who these people are, why they're together, and why they're getting ready to do what they're going to do.
I would have almost had them drop straight into the mission with a little bit of a safety zone and a countdown of, okay, you've got 3 minutes before this barrier comes down and you've got to go do this.
That would have been a much better story.
Kind of a get your wits together or die.
Exactly. That would have been cool. And then see if somebody didn't make it back, then the meltdown happened. You'd be like, oh my gosh, what's going on?
Yeah. So we'll see where the title goes.
Hopefully it gets better.
Yeah, I think it almost kind of has to a degree. Shall we move on to our Marvel title?
Sure.
This is Punisher number 224. This is the start of a new story arc. I just read the previous arc a day or two ago, or finished it off to get ready for this. And in that arc, Frank Castle gets the War Machine armor from Nick Fury.
Very cool. Well, if you think it's cool, I thought it was cool.
I think it's a great concept. I'm a little surprised they hadn't done it earlier. With the AI and stuff, and him being kind of just a weapons expert, I'll go with he's able to figure out the stuff pretty easily and how to use it.
Definitely. And he laid waste to that fake land called Chernia, I think it was.
Yeah, dropping him with the armor in a place that just needed to be destroyed and stuff. Not a bad plan.
Exactly. I took Chernia as like a Chechnya, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think Nick Fury Jr. didn't have a really good exit strategy for this, like how he would get, you know, Frank to exit the armor and stuff like that. But, you know, exactly. Hey, live and learn.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask you one thing that was kind of funny. Okay, I know some of the characters that are in here, but that first page when you open it up,
mm-hmm.
I thought it was funny. I know this is a character that I probably don't know or didn't pay attention to. I normally skip past, but the guy sitting at the bar, he has a dog head.
I have no idea if he's anybody in particular.
Me neither, but I'm like, why is there a guy with a dog head in this comic?
I was going to ask if you were familiar with the bar with no name.
I've heard of the bar with no name, and I know it comes up from time to time.
It's one of those that's got a moving location, different bartenders and such. Matter of fact, Star-Lord was bartending there for a bit in his title.
I remember that.
And it's where the various villains go to you know, have a drink, hang out with their friends, whatever.
Exactly.
The biggest storyline that it's probably best known for was when, and this was, I think, back in the 90s, it's been ages, where the Scourge of the Underworld killed off like 18 C and D and E list characters.
Oh, wow. You know? I don't think I read that.
It was a big deal because it was, I think, in mainly the Captain America title, maybe a few others, where these guys were just getting picked off one by one. And then one day, they're all gathering at this bar to figure out, what do we do about this? And they don't end up doing much because they wind up getting killed. I mentioned that for a couple of reasons. One, it's the bar with no name. It's got a history.
Yes.
Two, when we finally get to Frank coming in here, you know, causing some carnage, getting rid of some people, and then going into the back room to get the A-list, but the B-list villains.
Yeah, the big guys.
The big guys we've got are, let's see.
Rhino, Grizzly,
Bullseye. Bullseye and Scourge.
Scourge, yep.
The one who, the same costume, probably a different guy, mowed down like 18 people in the same bar many years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, what is he doing here?
He's back for more.
I was also confused what Grizzly was doing here, because wasn't he last seen working for Ant-Man over in Florida?
I saw him in Ant-Man and he turned a corner and he was a good guy, so I don't know why he's hanging out with the baddies again. He changed his life in that book.
Maybe he's just there to play poker or something, having moved back to New York. Maybe he's not going for a life of crime, but we'll never know.
Exactly. He's running like heck, like he knows the Punisher's after him, so who knows?
Oh, come on. If you see somebody with, you know, Iron Man-ish armor, clearly the War Machine armor, with the Punisher logo on it.
First thing you do is run.
Yes.
That's true. Very true. Very true.
You know, it was kind of funny because then, and they teased this last issue, Captain Marvel comes in saying, you know, hey, get out of the damn suit.
Exactly. Because they've been trying to, they want to take the suit back from him. He did what he was supposed to do with it, and now get out of the suit and be a normal, basically.
Well, and she had been dating War Machine.
Yes, that's true.
So a little personal for her.
Yeah, because he's wearing the Excalibur's armor.
Now, when we get to the two-page splash, where the two of them are just blasting each other over, you know, I guess Manhattan or whatever, and you cut to all the different people down below, it's like, oh, I see that happening. That's not good. Let's go do something about that.
Yeah.
Kind of a cool visual.
That was very cool. I like that.
I'll admit, given that we saw these characters, I was expecting all of them when we had that lineup at the end of, well, they're going to go tackle, Punisher and stuff. We don't see all of them.
No, and you actually have different people, too.
Yeah, and one or two of the others kind of made sense. All of these are kind of classic New Yorkers for the most part. The one that surprised me in the double page splash, Speedball.
Yeah, Speedball. He's there.
I think he's got a chance taking out the Punisher, to be honest.
Possibly. I could see that, yes.
The bullets would ricochet off.
Yeah, and he is there on the end page, so he will be there for the fight.
Was that him there at the end? I thought that was Cannonball.
That is Cannonball. I take it back, yeah. My bad.
When we hit the splash at the end with all these characters, it's like, okay, now we're going to fight. I'm like, okay, this is kicking off another round of the heroes going after the Punisher.
Exactly. And we've been down that road. Here, the Punisher gets a one-up in that he has body armor. But still, Captain Marvel could take him out by herself.
He doesn't have body armor. He's got War Machine armor. Let's be
clear.
War
Machine armor, yeah. Exactly.
That's more than just body armor. It's not like he's got a Kevlar vest. He's got a Kevlar vest that's fully armed, fully around him, and it has AI.
Exactly. I would not want to go up against Captain Marvel still with that armor.
Or almost any other one of most of these other characters.
Exactly. Yeah, they could do some damage.
There's two I think the Punisher could probably take out fairly easily.
Yes, and I think I know which ones you're talking about.
But most of the there's, I'm going to say, three others where it'd be 50-50, and there's a couple where it's like, yeah, Punisher's in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But, I was thinking the same thing. That's a fun mix for him to go up to.
It's like, do you really need this big of a team to take him out? I'm like, one or two of you could, done.
I don't think it's a matter of do they need that big of a team, but he's got this kind of an armor and he really shouldn't, so let's get this big of a team.
Exactly, exactly.
It's to cut down on the collateral damage, I think.
Yeah. Now, one thing, believe it or not, that I enjoyed about this, normally I don't enjoy this. This was a quick read. We've been doing some meaty issues, so this one was a little bit lighter. It was a little bit faster to read.
Yeah, it was a quick read, but not in a bad way.
No, it didn't feel like you weren't getting material. It's a decent comic, but a lot of action sequences. There's a lot of action in here when Frank came back to America.
Well, and I think all of this was to set up action in the next few issues.
Oh yeah, and it's gonna be a good fight. I think it could be very entertaining.
I think so too, but I mean, we all know Frank's gonna be around after the end of this.
He has to be, yeah.
Even the time they've killed him off a time or two, he's still around.
Yes, I agree.
So there's a little bit, okay, how are they gonna, quote-unquote, resolve this? But still, it's a fun story. The characters are pretty much acting as they should, given the situation. I think the fallacy on all of that isn't in this issue, but in the previous arc with Nick Fury Jr., having given him the armor to begin with, but hey, what's done is done.
Exactly. And once you give someone something like that, they don't necessarily want to give it back. So, and this, I've enjoyed him in the armor, but I think this is a way to get him back to status quo and get the armor back for, who knows, something else is going to happen with the armor in the future.
I think it's a great use of the armor.
I do too, because it's been sitting there ever since Rhodey died, and it's nice to see that here it is, and I like to see Frank Castle kicking butt.
Well, and if you're going to have the Punisher in the Marvel Universe, this is a legit way to do it.
Oh, for sure. And it powers him up a little bit so that he can go beyond that street model, because they've done so many stories with the Punisher, I mean, with all these characters, and this gives him a different range of his abilities, which is nice, because you have to do that every now and then. Otherwise, you feel like you've seen it over and over and over again. So this was a nice switch up.
Well, it's much better than the storyline they did, I think, in a Punisher title, although it might have been in another. I think, pretty sure it was Punisher title. But it was the Punisher, and this was about 10 years ago, where he went up against the Sentry.
Oh, okay.
Who's essentially Superman.
Exactly. Yeah. Good luck with that.
Frank had a rifle.
With a special bullet?
No. Maybe. I don't. Doesn't matter.
No Krypton bullet. Kryptonite bullet.
Centuryite or whatever it would be. But yeah.
Exactly. No, he just has a rifle. It's like, good luck with that, man.
I'm like, that'll be a short story.
Yeah, it's not going to go over very well.
When you've got a guy with a gun going up against an analog of somebody who's, you know, faster than a speeding bullet, not much drama there.
Exactly. This gives him a fighting chance with some bigger characters that are at that in splash page, which is nice. Because a lot of, you know, if he had a rifle and he's going up against the Hulk, forget it, you know. It's not going to happen. You need to have something that gives you a chance to fight.
Absolutely. You're going up against the Hulk. You need a bow and arrow. Everybody knows this.
Exactly. That's all you need, a bow and arrow.
I almost kind of wish this lineup at the end had somebody that was a, I don't know, token sacrificial lamb for next issue.
That would make it nice. Somebody who could, they, yeah, let them take out a little frustration on that guy.
Something to show that there are stakes. He just killed somebody.
Yeah, because I don't think they're going to kill anyone on this page.
Out of this page, at least three, maybe four of them have already died before.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
If I were to say one of these had to go, I could think of three, maybe four that I think would be prime choices.
Yeah, there's a couple on there that I'm looking at. I'm like, I wouldn't mind if they were gone.
Yeah.
I wouldn't miss them.
So this was a fun story. Some people don't feel the Punisher should be in the Marvel Universe. I disagree with that personally, but I get where they're coming from. This is, I think, a good use. I think they've been doing some fun stuff with the Punisher. I enjoyed this. It's a little bit of a light story. The art is decent. It's okay. It tells the story. It's not amazing. And I think that was maybe the one weak point, but frankly, it really didn't faze me at all while reading the story. I went with a solid B on this. I'm looking forward to the rest of this arc.
Yeah. Well, with me, believe it or not, I'm right there with you. I enjoyed this thoroughly. It was light, and it was kind of like a nice thing to read and review that wasn't an 80-page giant or something like really in-depth, because so many of the things we read because we like them are oversized anniversary issues. But this was really nice, and I like having Frank coming back to America. I like Frank Castle in the armor. And it's setting up a nice big battle, which is what I like to see the Punisher do. So I went with you, a solid B as well.
You know, one thing I kind of like to see now that he's back in America after being gone for a little bit, I would have loved for this story to have opened with him landing at a street corner, going up to the hot dog vendor or something, and just getting a hot dog.
Oh, yeah, that would have been nice.
Full armor, the whole thing. I just think that would have been funny.
And it'd be like, back in America, you know? That would have been awesome.
We'll see where they go. Shall we move on to our other title?
Yes.
This is Star Trek The Next Generation Through the Mirror, number 3. This is a weekly miniseries. I think it's 6 issues?
Five or six.
One of the two. It's following up after the Broken Mirror storyline that set up the Next Generation crew in the Mirror Universe, and now they're crossing over into the main universe. The Prime Universe, I guess, is what they're calling it these days.
And by the way, I have to preface this. I didn't read Broken Mirror, so it kind of ruined it for me.
Okay, interesting.
I for some reason, I remember you guys reviewing it and enjoying it, so I wanted to read it, and I thought I had ordered the trade, and I guess I didn't because I don't have it. I don't know. Maybe I ordered it through – who knows? Maybe I just forgot. But then I picked up all these singles, but going in there, then there's questions. I'm like, why are these people here? And I was like, oh, I must have missed out by not reading the other one.
I would say go pick – if you enjoyed this, go pick up the other one.
Okay.
The other thing I read – because I read 1 and 2 right before this, but right before reading that, I read the Star Trek Next Generation Mirror Broken Origin of Data one-shot that I got through, I guess it would have been the either the Star Trek box. It says it's from Loot Crate, but I stopped getting Loot Crate a while ago, but this is, it's not necessarily a brand new issue. I think it came with the first of the Star Trek boxes I got.
Okay, well, I pre-ordered this whole series, so I read issues 1, 2, and 3. So okay. That's all I've read of the entire series so far.
How much of a Trekkie are you?
I would say a light Trekkie. I watched the Next Generation TV show and I watched the original TV show, not all of them. And I didn't watch the reruns and everything. I watched them when they first came out and I enjoyed them, but I'm not hardcore into it.
Are you sure you watched the original Trek when it first came out? I didn't think you were that much older than me.
No.
Okay.
I probably watched the original in reruns because
okay,
I'm only,
that makes more sense.
44. I'm 44.
Okay.
No. Because that came out. Yeah. When I was a kid, I watched that. That was probably reruns. But I know the Next Generation, they did reruns and they came out with Deep Space Nine. I watched maybe probably 10 episodes of Deep Space Nine. I didn't care for that. But I remember most of these characters. Like, I know the faces, but the names, when they set them in here, I was like, oh, yeah, that's who that is. Oh, yeah, I remember.
I'm going to have to qualify myself as a hardcore Trekkie in terms of I've seen every episode they've done. Maybe not all of the animated series, although I have them, although I think I have. I'm not sure if my sister and I made it all the way through that or not. I'd have to check with her. In addition to all of that, I've read, I think, all of the Star Trek comics that DC has done, that Marvel did as part of the Paramount line, that IDW has done. And at one point, now granted, this was probably 20 years ago. No, probably 25, 30 years ago. I was current on all the pocketbook novels for Star Trek.
Wow. So I'm a Padawan to your Jedi.
That's okay. I've forgotten most of it.
Yeah, actually, at MegaCon, I went to the first MegaCon. It was that I went to was 3 years ago. And I remember they had the whole cast of Star Trek: The Next Generation, but I didn't want to wait in line. I was like, I don't want to go see them.
Well, I can understand that, depending on the line and stuff like that. Oh, a few of them are hilarious.
Yeah.
If you ever have the chance to watch Brent Spiner at a panel, he's pretty funny.
Oh, okay, cool.
Now, this is written by Scott and David Tipton. They are brothers. They are clearly hardcore Star Trek fans and aficionados. And they've been writing Star Trek stuff for IDW for over a decade.
Okay.
I like the concept of the Mirror Universe. Like I said, I enjoyed the previous miniseries on this. I thought the art in this issue was better than I thought it was in the previous two issues, but I didn't really compare it too closely. I just like this one a bit better.
Okay.
And there were some story moments here where we've got the Mirror Universe people infiltrating the Enterprise. And they're doing it off slightly dated information, and they acknowledge that. And it's funny because they're clearly doing this off season one information, and this is set in season four.
Yeah, because the uniforms are different, and they keep talking about that. Why are you wearing that? You know, are you going retro?
It is, sort of a thing.
Exactly. So I mean, that was definitely alluded to in here, or spoken about in here.
It was fun. It's the kind of thing that, you know, those sorts of mistakes are going to get made or whatever. And it was an enjoyable story. And it's the kind of thing that I think would have made for a really, really good, probably 2 or 3-parter or whatever in fourth season or something for Next Gen had they chosen to do it.
Yeah, I think this could have been a really good story, but I didn't read the first story like an idiot. so not reading that first story, I had just questions in here. I was like, okay, why do the Star Trek The Next Generation people that we know not know about the alternate universe, but the bad ones do?
They know about it. Well, actually, the Next Gen crew never encountered the Mirror Universe.
Okay.
At least I don't think they did. And if they had, certainly not by this point. The only ones that did were Kirk and Company in the original series, and there were 2 Mirror Universe episodes of Enterprise, but not a crossover one.
Okay.
It was just set in the Mirror Universe.
See, when I remember, I listened to your review and you guys liked it a lot, I remember. But I thought it was the original characters from the old series in the 70s and 60s or whenever that was. So this one, when I got to it, I thought this was a completely new story with the new Next Generation characters. So I was I can just jump on here. And then I was like, oh, no. Oh, no, I'm lost.
No, the previous one was basically how that Picard gathered his crew and got that Enterprise.
Okay, so that just kind of messes it up for me. But I mean, that being said, they're good writers because I read this and I pretty much understood what was going on completely, other than why the one side knows about them and the other side didn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And I'm a little unclear exactly how they're getting between universes.
Yeah, because they basically just beam into the other people's ship. Which I was like, I guess that little, beaming in, beaming down Scotty or what, I don't know what that thing's called.
The transporter. You're really a light Trekkie.
I'm a very light Trekkie. Well, the transporter, could that beam through dimensions, I guess? I'm like, what the heck's going on? Well,
if you go back to the original Mirror Mirror episode, that's how Kirk and a couple others got over to the other universe. There was an ion storm, and the transporter signals got interchanged.
Oh, so that's how they're jumping across. Okay, makes sense now.
So it definitely can happen, but what I don't get is how do they know where the ships are? How do they target?
Yeah, because they targeted it and timed it almost perfectly, you know, when nobody was in the transporter room. And it was kind of cool. And this was kind of like a black ops mission for the bad guys.
Yeah.
It was really cool. The one thing that I thought was funny, too, you know, to be a bad guy, you kind of have to have facial hair and you got to wear like your tank top, I guess.
Yeah, you got to have the goatee and stuff and a few things like that. It's
that was just funny to me.
Well, and I liked having Lieutenant Barclay show up.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. I like calling him Broccoli.
That was from the show and stuff. I think this would have given Dwight Schultz just a lot to work with for a darker version of the character.
Oh, yeah. This was actually very interesting. Like I said, I'm light on Star Trek, but I enjoyed it. It's just I wish I would have read that other one before reading this, because it's just left me a little bit, you know, questioning how or what's going on. But it's still, if you had read the first one, I imagine this would be very enjoyable.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the challenges with a series of miniseries approach to storytelling.
Yeah, if they come out with a number one, I assume it was a jumping on point, and I was like, maybe I was thinking back then, oh, my budget was over or something, I didn't buy the trade. And so I figure, oh, I'll just jump on here because it's something you guys liked. And I remember when we were talking about picking comics, I was like, let's check this out because I remember you guys liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, it's kind of unfortunate that I didn't read that first part.
Yeah, I can definitely see where that would be a little bit of an issue for you. For me, I'd read it. It's been a little bit since I've read it because I read it when it came out and stuff, which wasn't that long ago. But, you know, I've my reading's sporadic. I've read a little since then, and then a lot since then, and a little since then. So things blur.
Stuff happens.
I really think IDW is doing a great job with the Star Trek property, with what they're doing with the reboot version, the Abrams era type stuff, what they're doing with the Prime universe. I'm looking forward to this continuing. Not only do they have this, but I think they're doing either a one shot or a mini series with kind of what else is going on in the Enterprise at this point when they're being infiltrated.
Oh, yeah. They had one of the main characters, I can't remember, it was being solicited. They're going to have like a special on one of the characters. So, yeah, they're definitely branching out in this. And I like this more than the, what is the new Star Trek series with the new Kirk, the new movies?
Boldly Go.
Okay, I enjoyed this more than the Boldly Go. And Boldly Go is more fresh in my memory because I just watched those movies not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see this. If you're into Star Trek, this would be a good read.
I think the current story arc I'm in within Boldly Go is the one where they've got the different parallel worlds and such. And I'm liking it, but it's a little slow. Whereas this, I feel, and part of it's the weekly pace, with the three issues, they've packed a lot of story, and it's almost like a Mission Impossible adventure in Star Trek.
Yeah, and I like that because it's something you can relate to. It's not really it's kind of cool. Even if you're not into Star Trek, it's a storyline that may not be something that you wouldn't mind, you know, something that's up your alley, even if you're not a Trekkie.
Yeah, which is kind of ironic because Leonard Nimoy was on Mission Impossible for 2 seasons.
Oh, there you go.
See, useless trivia. It comes in handy once in a while.
Exactly.
I'm going to go with an A- on this. I'm really enjoying the storyline. I think it's a lot of fun. I'm a big fan of Star Trek, and they're hitting a fun era of the show and bringing in the Mirror Universe, and that's always cool.
Yeah. With me, I enjoyed it. I just felt a little bit lost just because I hadn't read the first one, but I knew it was a good story because I wasn't completely lost and it made coherent sense. So I went with a B- because I know that if I had read the first part, I would have enjoyed this way more, and that was on me. It's not on the writer or the book.
You planning on picking up Broken Mirror?
I'm thinking about picking it up. I'm going to probably send a message over to Eric and tell him to throw it in my shipment.
I'm sure Eric can hook you up over at Cowabunga.
Definitely. Because I've been enjoying this, and then it will make more sense to me when I read that first one.
It'll give you some more context as to how this Enterprise is similar and different to the one we know.
Exactly. So now, being a big Trekkie, do you like the new Star Trek, the new direction that everything's been going with the movies and stuff? Or
the movies I like, they're more action-oriented than kind of, I don't want to say plot-based, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
They're fun. The Discovery was a bit darker than I tend to care for, and I think the problem I have with the movies is it's almost precluding, aside from Discovery, it seemed to have been precluding for a while, a TV show. Now we've got Discovery, but is it in, which universe is it in? And it's not the utopic, hopeful future of Star Trek that I kind of like.
Yeah, so that TV series, I haven't watched it. You know, there's so many streaming services, and it's so fractured, it's getting kind of a little bit frustrating, you know, because I don't want to pay for 10 services. So I'm like, no, I'm not getting CBS All Access. But was that TV series good?
It was good. It was set 10 years before Kirk and Company, yet the set decoration and design and stuff felt more on par with Next Generation.
Oh, okay. So it almost was too futuristic for what it was supposed to be.
Yeah, but I think that's the problem with doing a prequel to something that was shot back in the 60s.
That's true.
You know, so I'm not saying I want to see the little, you know, funky light consoles and stuff like Chekhov and Sulu had, but there's a certain aspect of, I don't know, maybe it is set in the Abrams universe or whatever, so it's got that level of tech. I don't know. It's the problem I had is it was a darker, almost wartime sort of Starfleet.
Yeah.
So it was more like Deep Space Nine than, say, Next Generation or even Voyager.
Okay. Yeah, see, me, I would like to watch a show. I just refuse to pay for another streaming service. I have my Netflix and I have Amazon Prime, and that's all I'm going to pay for, other than my cable, of course, which I have. But I'm interested to see it. I hope it comes out someday. I doubt it, but we'll see. On regular TV, cable TV, maybe it's syndicated, who knows. But I'd like to see it because I do like Star Trek. I'm not hardcore at all. I'm very Star Trek light, very super light. But I enjoy sci-fi, so I like that. I like Star Wars, but I probably don't have enough time to be hardcore into any of them.
I enjoyed it, and there are aspects of, if you like the story we just talked about with Through the Mirror and stuff,
yeah,
you might want to check out first season of Discovery.
Okay.
There's some similar story things. They it's Star Trek. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And Star Trek, like I said, it can be good. There was like that one, I think it was called Deep Space Nine. I didn't care for that one. I was like, I don't want to watch that.
I think the challenge with Star Trek is doing something new and different is challenging. Yeah. And when the premise is to boldly go, and then you do a series where it's set on a space station that people come to you, you're not really boldly going.
Exactly. You're boldly sitting in the middle of space.
Boldly staying where people will come to us. And then there's Voyager of boldly returning home.
Exactly. Hey, one thing I was going to tell you, I agree wholeheartedly with what you said. Sorry to switch topics on you. I think these DC New Age of Heroes will be gone within a year. And the reason why, the price increase is happening on the DC side. But these, they said, are going to stay at $2.99. I think they're just going to let them peter out, you know?
I think keeping them at a lower price point makes sense, give them a chance to kind of compete on price. I just don't feel that they are iconic characters, or they don't have the legacy behind them, even with new challengers, to really have the nostalgia factor coming in or something like that. They're not bad titles, but let's face it, most titles don't last more than 2-3 years at this point.
No, it's true. The relaunching seems like it's coming quicker and quicker, which, you know, I don't want to say I'm fine with it because I can understand frustration with it. But it's almost like we got to change our mindset, because it seems like what the companies are going towards is almost like, you know, when Marvel said the season type thing, you know, you're going to get a 2 or 3 year season or 1 year season of this property. And then here's the next season of it, or the next omnibus of it. It seems like they're breaking up into chunks of that just because of the attrition. It just leads to that.
I get an aspect of the season model in so much as if I were publishing comics, I would want to have regular checkpoints where the creators know, hey, you've got at least the next 3 issues or the next 6 or whatever chunks you decide. So you don't risk getting into the middle of a storyline and then poof, it's gone and they've got to wrap it up that issue.
Exactly.
I mean, we've seen that even on like Justice League at one point.
Yeah, true.
and where I think it was James Robinson, who basically had a series of splash pages of, here are the next 8 stories I was going to tell you, but oh, I don't have time. Oh, well.
That's sad.
So that kind of sucks. So I think having the checkpoints, having almost a renewal period or whatever makes sense. The problem I have with particularly the way Marvel's doing their season mentality is they're anchoring them with events. Certain titles are only geared to last from one event to another. They relaunch, renumber, and retool all the titles, the teams, and whatnot every time.
Yeah.
It's such a churn-based model that it's hard to stay on a title because the title doesn't stick around that long.
Yeah, it's gotten really kind of out of hand, especially like, I think it was it Squirrel Girl or something where they had like 2 or 3 number ones in 1 year, which was just insane. It just relaunched so many times.
It was only 2 within 1 year, although it was close because I think the next fell into the next year or some such.
Yeah, but it was darn close. It was like a 13 or 14 month period. You're like, what the heck is going on? I mean, I can see that frustration. There's got to be something that happens like this season model, because I think that could work. But and I think DC's starting to have it too, because I just posted on the Slack channel. They said Hal Jordan's coming to an end. Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps, which makes me assume that maybe they're going to combine the Green Lantern titles. I don't know, but I hope they find something for. Who's the writer on that? Is it
Venditti?
Venditti, yeah, because he's a really good writer. I've been enjoying Hal Jordan so much.
Well, I mean, if you look back at the Green Lantern titles over the last decade-ish or so, maybe even a little further back, probably actually a lot further back, they typically have titles that'll go, I'm going to say, 3-4 years. They'll end those titles and they'll juggle the lanterns and shift who's in which book or whatever. You'd go from Mosaic to having a Red Lanterns book to, I'm trying to think what else they've done, but you get what I'm saying, where you've got
the whole gamut of colors and stuff.
Yeah. They've rotated through the titles and the characters all usually stay in play, but maybe they're pairing a little differently or whatnot. Maybe they've brought a few new lanterns in or focused a little bit on another core for a little bit of time.
So it's not out of the norm, and maybe I do think DC has handled the churn a little bit better of titles. When they do relaunch something, it seems like it tends to be for a real reason. Like Bendis came in, you know, of course, here's the Man of Steel and here's a Superman number one. That's a major shift, you know, a character or a writer coming over that's a big, big name like that. I can see. But Marvel, yeah, they tend to relaunch just for at a whim, you know?
Yeah, and they do it with a lot of promotional push on the first issue, so it inflates the sales, that kind of a thing.
Yep.
And it's training readers to only jump on first issues.
Yep, that's true.
When you hit a first issue that's not truly a first issue, but just has a number one on it, that's training readers to maybe not even do it then.
Yeah, I'm trying to train myself not to do that, because I find myself, it's just that completionist mentality that if I pick up something new, I feel like I have to go back and read to the first issue of whenever the last relaunch was. But you really shouldn't have to do that. You know, you should be able to read and pick it up at issue 32 and go forward to issue 96 if that's where you left off.
You should be able to read any issue, have an inroad into the story, understand enough of what's going on to enjoy it, have enough context that it feels somewhat relevant to you, and enough of a hook to get you towards that next issue, but not one where you feel you've got to read it because, damn it, they just didn't conclude anything or didn't they didn't do anything but tease the next issue.
Exactly. That's the frustrating. Yeah, I know what you mean, and I agree 100%. So I'm hoping that things get better with that stuff with the relaunching, but I don't know. It continues to happen, but it seems like the legacy stuff's starting to go away and new number ones are starting to come out.
Oh, for Marvel, absolutely.
So that's slowly happening. I expect to see a Punisher number one or him dying shortly.
Yeah, and then I expect to see a Punisher, what would it be, 232 or something in about 6 months?
Exactly.
You know, as you, you know, push the clocks back, you reset to a number one, as you roll it forward an hour, you go back to the legacy number. I don't know how it works.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's all fine and good to a degree, but I do think it's detrimental to the reading habits and getting people hooked on the hobby.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I did do my part for the hobby, just so you know. Have you written your free Comic Book Day issues? Or I know you're very far
couple.
Behind. Oh, okay. You and I believe, both of us, we ordered the whole bundle from Cowabunga, mm-hmm. correct? Okay.
Oh, not the whole bundle. I got a lot. I got most, maybe not all.
Yeah, I think I got all of them. I'm like, just give them all to me. But the cool thing was there was about half of them which are real kitty books, you know, mm-hmm. like Disney Princess. I have no desire to read that, or I don't want it. So I brought them to work. I handed them out to the parents who have kids. Hey, you have a girl. You have a boy. So encouraging new readers to get on board because their parents didn't know to bring them for free Comic Book Day. Shame on me. I should have told them. So I did that with about half my books. And then the other half, they actually had some good stuff this year. Some of it was really good. Some of it was kind of throwaway. So, but I actually ended up picking up two or three trades or three or four or something like that based on the free Comic Day material.
I think the only one I've read so far was the Power Ranger one, and it actually tied into the Shattered Grid stuff and was a pretty good jumping on point for the story.
I read that and I liked it, so I may be picking it up. I'm going to email Eric because after reading that, now I know what you've been talking about.
I'm really enjoying that series. It's a lot of fun, and I thought it was a good use of Free Comic Book Day.
Oh, yeah, because that's our big event, and that was a good jumping on point because I feel like I understood what in the heck you're talking about now, because I never read Power Rangers, don't know anything about it, but it was a pretty good story. That one was good. Humanoids had a really cool Meta Barons one. The art in there is amazing. Hardcore sci-fi. And, you know, Marvel had some good stuff showing the new writer for, you know, Spider-Man, things like that.
Well, I'd gotten an email yesterday from a guy named Trevor. And he was kind of wondering why DC didn't use the Free Comic Book Day to promote the New Age of Hero titles.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Nothing there. It was kind of surprising.
And, you know, I hadn't thought about it, but he's right. I think that would have been a great way to kind of get those things out there and maybe get some people interested.
Yeah, here's a new thing. Pick up the first issue for free of one of them that they're really pushing. I mean, it could have been the Terrifics. It could have been, who knows, Sideways, whoever they felt like they needed to give an extra little push, or maybe a couple of the stories, you know?
I've gotten onto one or two titles because of a Free Comic Book Day issue.
Yeah.
And the notable one was Love and Capes.
Oh, cool.
Now, that book was coming out quarterly, and the book at that time of the year would come out for Free Comic Book Day, and it would be free.
Cool.
So, think about that. Four issues a year, one of which is available for free. Now, granted, there was a pay version in case you missed it and want to get the thing or whatever. But, I mean, that was Tom Zoller putting his money where his mouth was.
Oh, yeah. And I'll tell you what, since I've read The Time of Mind because of you and Drew reviewing that book, I bought everything that he has in print. And I did that thing with Eric where he's ordering some for us, and he said he's going to have Tom sign them for us.
Yeah, Tom's a great guy and an amazing creator.
Yeah, and by the way, one other thing I was going to tell you, the ultimate frustrating book for Free Comic Book Day was Barrier by Brian K. Vaughan, because he did the Free Comic Day version in the normal size comic, and then when you order the Barrier comics, they come in that oversized thing and only fits in a magazine bag.
Yeah, I've got a couple of those, and it's funny because it's not that much taller than it'll fit into a regular comic bag. It's just about, I don't know, quarter of an inch too tall.
Exactly. You take the little plastic and flip it over. You just can't let anything heavy get on top or it's going to bend it.
That was, I'll be honest, if I had realized that, I might not have ordered the issues.
Me too. I was like, that was so frustrating. I would have waited for like maybe a collected edition or something. And he did the Free Comic Book Day of issue number one. And it's a normal size comic, and it has the same effect. You didn't miss out on anything by him shrinking it down to that size. So I was like, he could have done it like a normal comic book. I don't know why, but whatever.
Well, the funny thing is, I think if he had shrunk the art just maybe 2%, a lot of these have a wide enough margin top and bottom that it would have become more like a full bleed kind of a thing maybe or whatever. But I think it could have and should have been done. I think it was a unfortunate error for an otherwise good comic.
Oh, yeah. And what? Read the Free Comic Book Day after this or just flip through it, and you don't really feel like you lost anything. It was just, you know, something that was done. I was like, maybe he thought it needed to be that size, but it was just a little bit of frustration on my part. I was like, oh, man.
I wonder if it more closely matches the typical aspect ratio of a computer monitor.
That's what I'm thinking, a widescreen monitor, something like that.
At which point they should plan a little better on their future stuff, because they shouldn't need to do that.
Exactly. And they are starting to print the stuff, so they might as well make it where it can be read in print form a normal way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, good stuff, good stuff.
Absolutely. So let's see. As we record this, I think tomorrow the a digital version of previews and that kind of stuff goes out.
Yes.
On the 30th of May is when previews itself gets released. Then a week and a half later on June 9th is when the previews clips are going to be due. Bright and early that morning, or at least as early as I get up and start working on it. We've had some really good turnout last couple of months and stuff, so I'm looking forward to a lot of good clips and whatnot. Ton of new titles coming out. I think with the reshuffling of previews, there's a lot to find in there.
Definitely.
And then the following Saturday at 7 p.m., which will be June 16th, will be the comic page teleconference. We get on at 7 p.m. Central Time, and we talk about what we talk about. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. Yeah, I'll be there this time.
Awesome. I am not sure if we're going to do one in July.
Okay. Oh, because vacation.
It overlaps with Comic-Con for me.
That's true. Yeah.
So if people are interested, we can think about doing a little earlier, maybe a little later. I don't know. If people have thoughts, either put something on Slack or on the forum, and we can figure it out. Like I said, it's a lot of fun.
Definitely. Oh, and also, did you mention on our last recording, I don't know, but Eric put out a thing on the forums, on the comic book page forums, that he was going to put together a shop talk, kind of telling you how shops work and how his mail order thing works and all that stuff. But did you want to talk about that? I don't know if you already did.
I thought we talked about it last week, but we should definitely talk about it. I don't remember. I thought we did. Maybe we didn't. We should talk about it now regardless.
Okay, good.
Basically, yeah, Eric's going to take questions and just tell us how he's kind of running stuff. I'm looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think it'll be really cool. Hear the, you know, behind-the-scenes baseball.
Yeah, how it works and stuff. I mean, I've pulled books before. I did that at a local store here in Austin, Texas about 25 years ago. And it may not seem like it's that hard to do. And on the one hand, it's kind of not. You look at a list, you say, oh, they want X. Let me grab X. They want Y. I'll grab Y. Problem is, you get people like me who've got, you know, lists that go for pages and pages and pages, and then you've got a store that's getting the, I don't know, 50 to 100 different comics that come out each and every week, and you've got to kind of mix and match those things.
Oh, yeah. And I can only imagine like, you go to Dynamite or something, and they have 5 variant covers, and I want cover C. And he has to sort through 5 covers of who wanted which cover. That's got to be so frustrating.
Well, I mean, just think about this from a strictly logistical point of view. I tend to be getting 4 or 5 dozen comics a week, and yep. I'm not getting everything by a wide stretch. But imagine taking 50, 60, 70 comics and setting them out on a table. You need some table space for that.
A lot.
Now, some of these stacks are going to be pretty tall because you've got a lot of people who want, be it X-Men, Batman, or what have you. And then, like you said, you've got the variant covers and such. It's just logistically, it's a lot more involved, than I think people may give it credit for and stuff. And then, of course, he's got the added complexity of, you know, shipping the stuff out or whatnot. But, that's something else I want to mention. Last week when we recorded, I had gotten my books on Monday.
Okay.
Okay. So I had time to read a couple of things and whatnot. And then on Thursday, my next shipment came.
Oh, no.
I'm like, damn, that was fast. I literally was not expecting it. I was down the UPS store picking another package up, and I'm like, oh, I wonder what this is. I open it. Wait, it's my comics. It's Thursday. How did that happen? Where was the time travel involved?
You're like, no.
It was awesome, but it was about an influx of about 100 comics that week. So
that puts you in a hole for sure.
pretty much. And I didn't get a whole lot of reading done last week. But you know, hey, it happens.
Stuff happens.
So, yeah, plenty of good stuff to be had, and I'm hoping people, when they get their previews or look at the online stuff, like I said, can find stuff in the next one, and it's a great opportunity with the preview spotlight to share your love of comics, to support the creators, the comics, and the titles you love, get other people hooked on them.
Definitely, I agree.
So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it? That
pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Batgirl number 23 from DC, Invincible Iron Man number 600 from Marvel, and Delta 13 number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.